We are learning Daf Mem Gimel in Yuma, which is really sort of in the middle of a sugya. The Gemara is going through the psukim for the Parah Aduma, who has to do, whether it has to be a Kayin specifically that does it, or it could be a Zar, and so on and so forth. So we had a Machloikis, Rav and Shmuel. According to Rav, it has to be the Kayin Gadol himself that shechts the Parah Aduma. According to Shmuel, it could be a Zar, as long as the Kohen Gadol is watching him. Now, by way of introduction, the Gemara is going through the various psukim because the Gemara had a statement before, and the Gemara is expanding on that, is the fact that by Parah Aduma, there are some psukim that are, so to speak, a continuation of the pasuk before, that whatever the pasuk before is discussing, meaning if the pasuk before is discussing a Kohen, the next pasuk also we'll be discussing the similar type of kayin. And then there are some psukim where just the opposite, that if the pasuk before is discussing the kayin, then the next pasuk actually specifically is discussing a non-kayin, is able to do the avodah, is able to do that portion or that part of the avodah. So along those lines, the Gemara is trying to prove which psukim continue and which psukim are changing from the connotation from the pasuk before. So we'll start from, even though we may have done these two couple lines already, we'll start from 8 lines from the top, 2, 4, 6, 7 lines from the top, where it says, V'lokach ha-kayin eitz erez. That's the next pasuk that the Gemara is darshaning. Again, we're in the context of whether or not it has to be specifically a kayin or anybody else who's not a non-kayin is able to do the avodah. So the pasuk says, V'lokach ha-kayin eitz erez ve'ezov u'shnisoy las. So part of the avodah for the Parah Aduma is taking these various ingredients, the eitz erez, and putting it into the fire. So it says the kohen has to take it. Now, lishmuel da'afilu b'kohen hejoit. According to Shmuel, that says that it didn't have to be that a zar was able to do it. But then the pasuk before told us that by the sprinkling of the dam it had to be specifically a kohen. So this pasuk is also telling us afilu b'kohen hejoit, that it doesn't have to be the kohen gadol necessarily, that the same one who did the sprinkling. Here it could be a regular kohen that is putting in the other ingredients. L'rav. According to Rav, that was always talking about a regular kohen, itzrach. Over here, you need the pasuk to tell us that this part also needs to be done by a kohen. You know why? We would have thought, kivin delav gufit the parah ninu, since this is not really the etzim part of the parah. It's not the parah, it's not the ox that's being thrown into the fire, it's the other ingredients. Loili boy a kohen, we wouldn't need a kohen at all, kamash malo, and that's why we need the pasuk to tell us now that this is a continuation, and it is, in fact, a kohen that has to do this part of the avodah as well. And the pasuk continues, V'chibas begodav ha-kayhein, and it says that the kayin who's dealing with the Parah Aduma has to wash his clothing, and we darshan b'kihunoi, which means while he's wearing his big day kahuna. Gemara is going to darshan this in a second. V'timei ha-kayhein ad ha-erev, and then it says, and this kayin who, after he washes his clothing, he is tamei until he goes to the mikvah that evening. Now, we understand why it has to say that the kohen is wearing his big day kahuna, because it didn't only apply when they did the Parah Aduma the first time in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, but also for generations to come, whoever's involved in the Parah Aduma has to be wearing their big day kahuna. So the Gemara says, one second, Hani chalamandi yama ladaris b'kayin hejit, shaper. But that makes sense if you're dealing with the chiddush over here, is to tell me that the kohen, even though it's a regular kohen, that he has to be wearing his begodim, because I would have thought that maybe it's a regular, once it's not the kohen gadol anymore, maybe it could really be a random person. Even a kohen doesn't have to be wearing his big day kahuna. So the chiddush is that he has to be wearing the big day kahuna. El lamandi yama ladaris b'kayin gadol. But according to the mandi yama, that this is talking about even the kohen gadol that shechting the Parah Aduma in his capacity as a kohen gadol. Hashta kohen gadol be'inon. So if the Torah is already requiring that the kohen gadol do it, b'kihuna mibayi, is it necessary to tell us that he's wearing his big day kahuna? Of course. Otherwise, if he's not wearing his big day kahuna, that's not in his capacity as kohen gadol. Elamai. So obviously, if we're requiring that it be the kohen gadol, we're expecting him to be wearing his big day kahuna. So what would be the chiddush of the Gemara? So the Gemara says, you're right, you are right, that is a good point. The pasuk doesn't have to point it out. However, there are some places in the Torah where even though it is obvious and we would theoretically have been able to figure it out on our own, the Torah goes ahead and writes it out beferish for some other reason to tell us that it has to be, even if it's the Kohen Gadol, is telling us and pointing out that it has to be wearing his big day kahuna as well. Continuing with the psukim, again, to find out which psukim are a continuation and which psukim switch, the next part of the process of the Parah Aduma is v'osav ish tahar es efer ha-parah v'hiniach. So it says that a person, now it doesn't refer to a kohen here, now we're referring to a regular person, as long as he's tar, he collects the ashes from the parah aduma and he puts it with the water, as we'll see in a second. Now, ish, the reason why the pasuk uses the word ish, lahakshir es hazar, to tell us that even a zar no longer needs to be a kohen. At this point now we're switching, it could be a regular person. Tahar, lahakshir es ha'isha, that as long as they're tar, because otherwise it wouldn't be necessary for the Torah to point this out, obviously they have to be tar. If the Torah is emphasizing they have to be tar, it's coming to include another type of person, it's not including a man, because we already dashed on the word before. Elamai, it's coming to tell us that even a woman is able to do this part of the avodah, that she's able to collect the ashes. V'heniach, so, and then the next part is that he should, or the person should put the ashes in the fire, in the cup. So, mishiyesh by das lahaniach, it has to be somebody who understands what they are doing. Yotzecheir shaytiv katan, so that excludes someone who is, doesn't have a full capacity, including a katan. Shein behen das lahaniach, that they, since they don't understand the level of what they are doing, obviously they know what their hands are doing, but they don't understand what the point of what they're doing is and where it fits into the big picture, so therefore they're not kosher to do the collection of the ashes and putting it into the Kli Kodesh. Alright, so that's the literal psukim. Now we're going to go through the drasha again a little bit more specifically. Tanan Hasan, we learned over there. Hakol Sheirin Mekadesh, everybody is kosher to do Kiddush. Kiddush is putting the, after you gather the ashes and put it into the Kli Charis, you then add water. Anybody is able to do this part of the process. Chutz mi Cheir Shoyte V'Katan. The Tanakhama says, any Cheir Shoyte V'Katan are all excluded. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir B'Katan. So Rabbi Yehuda has an interesting shita. He says, it's okay for a katan, and obviously these are going to be based on drashas that we're going to bring later in the Gemara. So he says that even a katan is able to do the putting of the water, to include the water with the ashes. Upaisel beisha uvandroigenus, but he does. Rabbi Yehuda specifically says that a woman and an androgynous who is a suffix, whether they're a woman, a woman is not able to do the kiddush. Is not able to do that part of the process. My time of the rabbanon. So first, let's understand the rabbanon that say everybody is mutter l'chayra. They only exclude a chereshayt of a katan, which means that they hold that a woman is okay. So what is the reasoning of the rabbanon that say that a woman is okay and a katan is not okay? Tchsev, because the pasuk says v'lo. It says that they, the lachoi, that they take it to become tamei from the ashes of what was burnt from the parah aduma. So we dash it. Hanach the pasul of asifa, whoever was not permitted to do the gathering of the ashes, as we just described in the Gemara before, whoever could not do the gathering, and we said a woman could pasul the chabekidush. So they said those people, those similar type of people, are also not able to put in the water to make the kiddush of the paraduma. However, the flip side, hanach the achshul chab asifa, and those people who could do the asifa like a woman, like we just said, as opposed to the katan that couldn't. So those who are allowed to do the gathering of the ashes, after the kiddush, are able to do the kiddush, are able to put the water in. So therefore, according to the Tanakhama, since they couldn't do the collection because they didn't have the das, right? That's one of the reasons, the reason the Gemara gave before, so therefore they can't do the kiddush either. As opposed to a woman, as we dash in from the word tahar, that a woman was included, so a woman also was able to add the water. So that seems like a very good drasha. Rabbi Yehuda, what's Rabbi Yehuda's retort? Because he says it's just the opposite. He excludes a woman and he allows the katan. Rabbi Yehuda, imkein lemakra v'lokach. Let the pasuk use v'lokach, which is a similar lashon to the same verbiage that the Gemara, that the pasuk was using beforehand. That we're talking about a person. V'lokach would have fit in nicely. My time of v'lokchoi lachu. Why does the pasuk switch it to a plural of lachu da'afilu katan, to tell us to include another category of person, that even though katan wasn't able to gather the ashes, they are able to put in the water. Da'afilu katan, the pasuk ha'hasam, that even though katan wasn't able to gather the ashes, hacha kasher, over here, a katan is allowed. Now that tells us to include a katan that he's able to put in the water. Isha minale. Now how does he know that a woman specifically is excluded, according to Rabbi Yehuda, from putting in the water? Because it says, v'nosan, so he dashes the fact that it says v'nosan, and he puts the water in, v'loi v'nosna, and not that she puts the water in. So therefore we see a woman is excluded. That's Rabbi Yehuda's drasha. So v'lochai tells us that a katan is included, v'nosan tells us that a woman is excluded. V'rabban, remember the Rabban, the other way around. They say a woman's okay, a katan's not okay. Okay. Because of Rachman of Alakach Benosan. If it would have said, you're darshaning based on because of the way the Pasuk has to set it, but the truth of the matter is that the really had no options. It could not have, never have used the phrase Alakach Benosan. Why? Because if it says Alakach Benosan, Havamina ad shakol chad v'yav chad, I would think that the process requires that whoever was the one who started the process has to be the one who finishes and continues the process. Because he takes it, he, referring to the person who, before, whoever it was, has to continue and finish the process. So therefore, that's not true. Because of Rachman of Alakai, that's why the Torah says Alakai, that it could even be somebody else. Two people can be involved to tell us that somebody else. Not necessarily that a woman, for example, but it could be somebody else. Because of Rachman of Alakai, but if the Torah is Vinosnoi, so now once we're changing it to the plural to tell us that somebody else besides the original person is able to continue the process, maybe Vinosnoi also it should use the Lashon Rabim to tell us or to refer to somebody else. So, and that would tell us that someone else, even a cotton, for example, is able to do the nesina. Havamina ad shakli trei v'yavu trei. Now, if the pasuk was consistently using a lashon rabim, until now the pasuk was consistently using a lashon yachid, I would think that here the Torah wants it to be dafka two people. So that's why kasev rachman of alachoi v'nosan. That's why the Torah uses a plural in one case to tell us that includes a cotton, but v'nosan to tell us that v'lachoi to tell us that it could be done by two people, including in this case, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Isha, and v'nosan, but he has to put it that it can't be done by a katan. So he dashes, these words of the pasuk are not here to tell us whether a woman or a katan is included, but simply to tell us that it doesn't have to be necessarily the same person who started the process to continue and finish the process. Now, so that's the machlekes, that's the base of machlekes, Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon. Again, what's the bottom line? That according to the Rabbanon, that a katan is pasul and an isha is okay, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the other way around. An isha is pasul and a katan is okay. But here we have a pasuk, v'lokach ezo v'tavo b'mayim ish tahar. That's the pasuk. The pasuk says they collect the ingredients and they dip it into the water. Ish. So the Rabbanon ish v'lo isha. So again, according to the Rabbanon, it's very consistent that it could be a man and not a woman. Tahar lahachshir is a katan, to tell us that even a katan is able to do the sprinkling. The Rabbi Yehuda ish v'loy katan. He says ish is actually has to be a full grown man and not a katan. Tar lahachshir as a isha. And in fact, like similar to the way the Rabbi Yehuda darshan before by the asifa of the ashes, similar over here by the sprinkling. Rabbi Yehuda also says the tar is coming to include a woman. Okay, so now if so, meisvei I'll ask you a kasha, a contradiction. Hakok sheirin lahazois. Everybody's able to do the sprinkling chutz except for mitumtum v'andreganis v'isha. And it says specifically that a woman cannot. So this is a kasha in Rabbi Yehuda, because here we're saying this baisa says that a woman cannot do the sprinkling. And in fact, even more so, it says v'katan sheish boidas isha meseyasoi. The katan who understands what he's doing, who doesn't necessarily have the full context of what he's doing, a woman can help him umaz and he's able to do the sprinkling. So this is exactly a contradiction to what Rabbi Yehuda holds. Well, here the baisa is saying that a katan can and an isha can't. V'loy poli Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue. So it seems that we misunderstood on the top of Amar Beis. We misunderstood what Rabbi Yehuda's shita is. So now, full circle back to where the Gemara started from, Amar Abaya. No, it's not a kasha. Why kivan to Amar Mar? Mashma moitz miyad mashma, or mashma mameilo polit. Like this is how the Gemara started off on Mem Beis, on the bottom of Mem Beis and Mem Beis. Since we know in the Parsha of Parah Aduma, sometimes the pasuk is a continuation, and sometimes the pasuk is flipping, not a continuation of the context of what the pasuk is talking about before. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, based on the way he dashes, it has to be that the woman is okay and the katan is not okay, based on the way he darshins. So therefore we know, we're forced to learn that Rabbi Yehuda argues, that even though he doesn't say it, even though he's not quoted in the braisa that he's arguing, but we know based on the way he's darshining, and we know that the pasuk flips the way Rabbi Yehuda darshins, so he does argue even though it doesn't say so in the braisa. Now the Gemara continues with this parsha, but a different topic. V'hiza hatar al hatamei, that the tar person sprinkles the paraduma on the tamei person. Tahar, but if the pasuk is calling him tar, michlal shehu tamei. If the pasuk has to make a point of saying that he's tar, normally if we just talk about the fact that someone's doing it and we know it's avoida, we understand and assume that it's going to be a tar person. By the fact that the Torah has to emphasize and point out that this person is tar, that means that there was some part of him that wasn't exactly 100% pure. And we're saying he's tar enough. Who is that? Limeid, this teaches us al tful yoim shekasha b'parah, that somebody who just went to the mikvah today, didn't even have hair of shemesh yet, but he went to the mikvah already, he is qualified to be somebody who can sprinkle the parah aduma. Amar Rav Asi, ki haveba Rav Yochanan v'reish lakish bepara, when Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan were thinking about the sugya of parah aduma, lo masik minei elekimai Tmasik tala mi bekarvo is an interesting expression. All they were able to be mechadish over here was equivalent to what a fox who's scampering across a dry field and collects dust, that he kicks up the dust, which is usually just a little bit because, you know, foxes are very sneaky and they're conniving that they don't kick up a lot of dust. So they too also, when they were darshaning the sugya of parah aduma, they weren't able to come up with a very big chiddush because each pasuk is, sometimes it's mashma and sometimes it's moitzi. So they didn't have a lot of chiddushim. As the Gemara says, Amri mashma moitzi miyad, mashma mamela. That sometimes the pasuk is excluding from what it was discussing in the pasuk before, meaning if a woman was okay for the one part of the avodah, is not necessarily okay for the next part of the avodah, and sometimes it is a continuation of the avodah. The context is similar to the context before. Tani Tana Kameda Rabbi Yochanan. So we learned it from Rabbi Yochanan going back to the original part of the avodah called shchitos sheirois. Bizarre, chutz mishal para, right, which is consistent with what we've been saying. At least according to Shmuel Shita, that has to be the kohen gadol that shechts. That everybody normally shchita in the Beis Hamikdash, any time you have shchita, it can be done even by a zar, except for para aduma, which must be done by the kohen gadol. So this is what one of the Tanaim said to Rabbi Yochanan. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said to this Tana, "Poik Tani Lebrug, go out and teach the halacha to everybody else. Loi mitzina shchita bizar psula. Never. There's no such thing as shchita that's possible bizar. Any shchita, which means including para aduma, can be done by a zar." Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, what was the point he was saying? That the fact that he was able to say that everything is kosher by zar. Not only is he not listening to the Tana because we already had a Tana that said that it had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. Not even listening to his shita of his own Rebbe. So Rabbi Yochanan quoted his Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon ben Yoitzadok, shchita bepara bezar psula. He says very clearly that a zar cannot shech the parah aduma. But Rabbi Yochanan continues and says, but I say, Sheira, it is kosher with a zar. Why? Because lemetzin a shchita psula bazar. There's no such thing as a shchita that's possible bazar. That because shchita is not a regular avoida, even by the parah aduma, it could be shechted by a regular person. Not like the shchita, not like Shmuel, for example, and the other shchitas that held that a parah aduma had to be shechted by the kohen gadol. Now, last part of this Gemara is Bala Yetzah Parah Shniyah. This is actually referring back to the Mishnah of the Kohen Gadol, when he would come to the second parah that he shechted for a chatas on Yom Kippur, would say a vidui and he would include everybody in the vidui. So the Gemara asks, Maishnah b'vidui rishon d'lo yamar ubnei Aaron am kedosh shecha. How come when he does the first vidui he just says ani ubeisi, but he doesn't include the rest of his family, the kayanim? Umaishnah b'vidui sheni d'amar ubnei Aaron am kedosh shecha. But by the second vidui he does include, ask for kapara even on the Kayanim. How come only by the second vidui? So Tana Dvar Rabbi Shmuel, because they taught us in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Kacha Yamidas Hadin Naisenes. This is the way, the proper behavior. Mutav Yovai Zakai V'Chapar Alachayev. It's better somebody who himself is clean, Zakai, that he should ask for kapara on somebody who still has Averis, V'Yovai Chayev V'Chapar Alachayev, but not somebody who has Averis who should be asking for kapara for other people that have Averis. So therefore, over here, first he has to cleanse himself and then he could ask for the Kayanim. But he can't already include the Kayanim to ask for kapara before he gets the kapara on the Kayanim. Adkan, Zakta Mishnah Vaita. Shochat. Shachtu. So now the Kohen Gadol does the Shech V'Kiva B'Mizrak as Domai, and then he has to, the Kohen Gadol himself has to catch the blood from the carbon that he just shechted. The Nosnoi, and he gives the cup of blood L'Mishahum Amareis Boy, so the person who's going to stir it, because till he's going to get back to sprinkling the blood is going to take a while, and we're afraid that if the blood sits, it's going to coagulate. So somebody has to stir it. And where does he stand? Al Arivit Aravi Shebe Hechel. And he stands on the fourth row in the Hechel, because there were stones, large stones on the floor, so you were able to count rows of stones. So the Gemara understands at first in the Havamin of the Mishnah that we're talking about the fourth row inside the Hechel. Kadesh Shalai Yikresh, and again, the purpose of the stirring is so that it doesn't coagulate. Noto Machata, So now the Kohen Gadol takes the fire pan, which he's going to use to gather coals, and he goes up to the top of the Mizbech. And he moves the ashes, the coals back and forth. And he takes from the hottest coals from the inside that are buried inside the heap of coals. So he has those in his fire pan. And then he comes down off the Mizbech. And now he places the pan of coals on the fourth stone, the fourth row in the Azara. Now, the Mishnah goes through the differences between Yom Kippur and a regular day. Normally he would use when you're gathering ashes for the Keteris, you would use a pan that was made out of silver, and then you would only transfer it into a gold pan. But today, because of the weakness, we don't want the Kohen Gadol to do more than necessary. And he used to use the gold pan itself to gather the coals, and that's the pan that he would use to go into the Kodesh Kodoshim. Normally he would gather up 4 kav worth of coals, umaru l'tak shloishes, and he would pour it into a pot, shloishes kav, and he'd pour it into a pan that only held 3. Vayoyim, but that's on a regular day. Vayoyim, to save the energy of the Kohen Gadol, chloishes b'shloishes kav, and he just starts with 3 in the first place. Ubahayim machnes, and that's what he brought, so he wouldn't have to do the transfer, one last step, he would bring that directly into the Kodesh. Rabbi Yosi Yomer b'chol yom chayza b'shal saw. No, he says not. He didn't start with 4, but rather he started with a saw, which is a much bigger shear. Umar b'tzal shloshes kavim, but he agrees that they ended up in a pan that only held 3 kavim. And once again, vayom chayza b'shloshes kavim u'bayom machnis. But he does agree also on Yom Kippur that the Kohen Gadol starts with a pan that only holds 3 kavim, and he uses that to itself to go into the kodesh. B'chol yom chayza kveida. Normally the fire pan was very heavy because sticking a shovel into the coals really wears down the shovel very quickly, so they had to make it thick so it didn't wear down. But on Yom Kippur, for the Kohen Gadol's sake, Kala, it was a very light one. Normally it would be a short handle. It was longer, so to give the Kohen Gadol the support when he puts it under his armpit, so it's easier to carry because it was heavy. Usually, on a regular day, it was a greenish type of gold or a bluish type of gold. And today, on Yom Kippur, it was a reddish gold. That's Rav Menachem Shita. On a regular day, he would bring half of the portion of the Keteris that he was dealing with B'Shachris in the morning, and the other half he would bring in the evening. And then today, besides that other regular Keteris, he would add a handful of Keteris, and that's what he would use to bring into the Kodesh Kedoshim. On a regular day, they would grind the spices very thin. But on Yom Kippur, they would make it thin of thin, meaning after it went through the grinder, they would put it back into the grinder and grind it a second time. On a regular day, Kohen is doing the Avodah on the Mizbech, would go up on the eastern side, which is the closest side, and also, since he was going to turn to the right anyway, the eastern side was on the right side of the Mizbech. The Yordan bin Ma'arovah, then they would loop around the top of the Mizbech, and they would come down on the west side. But today, for the Kohen Gadol, he would go up right down the middle of the ramp because he wanted to show that he was like a Ben Bias for the covenant of Klal Yisrael. He says it wasn't a Yom Kippur thing, it was any time the Kohen Gadol, since he was the most important person in the Beis HaMikdash, he would always go up through the center of the ramp. Regular day, the Kohen Gadol would use the kier to wash his hands and feet. They would use a special pitcher of gold to wash the Kohen Gadol's hands. Again, Rabbi Yehuda argues, again, the Kohen Gadol was separate, was special, and he would use on every day, he would use this special golden pitcher. On a regular day, the Gemara is going to dash in where we get these numbers from. On a regular day, there were four like bonfires on top of the Mizbeach. But on Yom Kippur, there was an extra one, there was a fifth. Divrei Reb Meir, that's Reb Meir Shita. Reb Yosi Yomer, b'chol yom shloisha. On a regular day, there were 3 fires. Vayom Arba, again, there was one more on Yom Kippur, a fourth one. Reb Yehuda, b'chol yom shtayim. On a regular day, there were only 2. Vayom shloish, and on Yom Kippur, there was a 3rd. Okay, so that is the Mishnah. So just to start the next line of the Gemara, Vaksiv. Now, the problem is, the first thing that we started with was that after the Kohen Gadol Shechta, that he took the cup full of blood and he would hand it to a kohen and he would stand on the fourth row in the heichal. So the Gemara has a problem with that. It says in the pasuk v'chol adam lo yeh ba'oil moed, that when the kohen gadol was doing the avodah, was sprinkling the dam, even in the kodesh kodashim, or certainly on the parochus, no other kohen was allowed to be in the heichal. So how could it be that while he was doing the keteris, that there was a kohen standing there stirring the blood in the heichal? No one was allowed to be there. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Tani Shel Heichal. Not that he was the fourth row in the Heichal, but rather he was the fourth row from the Heichal, starting from the Heichal, moving out, so that the Kohen, in fact, who was holding the cup of blood, was standing outside of the Heichal. Tana Rabbanu, we also learned, V'chol Adam La'iyya Ba'al Moed. So now we're going to go into this drasha, that no Kohen is allowed to be in the Heichal when the Kohen Gadol was doing the Avodah. Yochel Afilu Ba'azor, maybe you can't even be in the Azor itself. Tama Lomer Ba'al Moed. That's fine, so that's why the pasuk has to say that he's not allowed to be in the oil moed. Now we're on the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Ein li'ela ba'oil moed sheba midbar. Maybe when the Torah was talking that no one else was allowed to do that, be there, when Aharon HaKohen Gadol was doing the avodah, maybe that only applied when the Klal Yisrael was in the midbar. Shiloh beis ha'ilam minayin. How do we know the same rule applies to the heichol, that no Kohen was allowed to be in the heichol even in the regular beis hamikdash? Minayin, how do we know that's true? Talmud Lomer b'kodesh, it just means b'kodesh, and the kodesh of the beis hamikdash was the same as it's a din in the kodesh. It has nothing to do with the location in the midbar or Shiloh or anything like that. Eliyahu b'shas ha'katara. Maybe that's only true when the Kohen Gadol is working on the Keteris. B'shas matan damim minayin. How do we know the avodah that the Kohen Gadol does in the heichol with the sprinkling of the blood? How do we know that it applies there also, that no other Kohen is allowed to be around? Tamad lamer b'boyoy l'chaper, that is coming to be mechaper, which is sprinkling of the blood. Maybe only when the Kohen Gadol goes in. B'yitziyasa minayin. How do we know that you're not allowed to be there throughout the entire process until the Kohen Gadol comes out? Tamad lamer atzei soyi, until he comes out. Let's just do two more lines. V'chiper ba'adoy ba'ad be'soy ba'ad kol kal yisrael. So we say that it's talking about that the Kohen Gadol is going to do the sprinkling. It's going to be a kapara for everybody. Kaparasoy kodemes l'kaparas be'soy. So we point out that first it's v'chiper ba'adoy, that first he's getting a kapara for himself before he gets the kapara for his family. Kaparas be'soy, and the kapara that he gets for his family kodemes l'kaparas achiv ha'kohenim, that even comes before he gets the kapara for the kohenim, the all of kahuna, the chabaras achav kohenim, and the getting the kapara for all the kohenim kademus, the chabaras kol kal yisrael, comes before the kapara for the rest of klal yisrael. Okay, we'll stop over here.